Welcome to Supersized Science, where we feature research and discoveries nationwide, enabled by advanced computing technology and expertise at the Texas Advanced Computing Center of the University of Texas at Austin. I'm Jorge Salazar, a science writer at TAC. Just milliseconds after the universe's Big Bang, chaos reigned. Atomic nuclei fused and broke apart in hot, frenzied motion. Incredibly strong pressure waves built up and squeezed matter so tightly together that black holes formed, which astrophysicists call primordial black holes. Did primordial black holes help or hurt the formation of the universe's first stars, eventually born about 150 million years later? Supercomputer simulations helped investigate this cosmic question, thanks to the Stampede 2 supercomputer of the Texas Advanced Computing Center, part of the University of Texas at Austin. Here to talk about their latest study using Stampede 2 to simulate primordial black holes are astrophysicists Volker Brohm and Bu-Yan Liu. Brohm is a professor and chair of the Department of Astronomy at UT Austin. Liu, a postdoctoral researcher at the University of Cambridge. Welcome to the podcast.
You are welcome, Johan. Glad to talk to you.
Could you speak to the main results of this work, study on black holes, and how they affect the formation of the first stars in the universe?
I would say I will hand over to Bu-Yan in a minute, but just again, a broad introduction. So the overall game plan is that we want to understand how the universe was transformed from the simple initial conditions of the Big Bang. The Big Bang put in place the primordial fireball was subject to quantum mechanical processes, and these quantum mechanical processes, they put in place the fluctuations in the mass density of the universe. And those fluctuations then, because of gravity over very, very long periods of time, were amplified to structures, and the structures, they were driven by the dynamical importance of dark matter. And the dark matter then basically put in place the skeleton, the scaffolding, so to speak, for the formation of galaxies. We have a very, very successful theoretical model how this proceeded. This is the famous Lambda cold dark matter model, Lambda CDM. And this is very, very well constrained observationally by observations in the cosmic microwave background. So we know the initial conditions for formation of all structure in the universe. And this gets us to roughly a million years after the Big Bang. And of course, for a computational scientist, this means we can set up our numerical computational box. We have the initial conditions to very high precision. And then we know all the laws of physics. And then we, with the power of the supercomputers that we have available at TAC, then we can follow the evolution of the universe for millions of years, hundreds of millions of years, billions of years, until the moment that these initial conditions, simple initial conditions put in place by the Big Bang, led to the formation of the first stars, first galaxies, and then ultimately the structures that can then be observed with frontier telescopes like now the James Webb Space Telescope, the JWST, and other. One big question is in science, this is one of the biggest questions that we have in science, what is the nature of dark matter? So in astronomy, in astrophysics, we absolutely know that dark matter must exist because it is impossible to construct and understand the evolution of the universe without dark matter. But then we do not know from a particle physics viewpoint what the dark matter actually is, because we have never been able to detect it in a laboratory on Earth. The Large Hadron Collider at the CERN in Europe hasn't found any hints, and there are no hints in the laboratory. So we don't know exactly what the dark matter is, and therefore it's really important that we are broad in our approach, what we look at. And very recently, and this is now where Bu-Yan's work comes in, very recently there has been increased interest in a particular kind of dark matter, which is really linked to a very, very strange kind of black hole, primordial black hole. So primordial black hole, dark matter, this sort of is now incredibly hot, hundreds of papers being written. And at that point, I hand over to Bu-Yan. Bu-Yan, why don't you take up the story?
Thank you, Volker. So that's why we are really interested in primordial black holes. First reason is that it is kind of a candidate model for dark matter. The second reason is is that recently it has become really hot. And the reason for that is that we have just detected gravitational waves. And these gravitational waves are produced by mergers of black holes. So it is possible that primordial black holes can explain these gravitational wave events that we have been detecting over the past like 7 years. And then this just motivates us because we in the past, we worked mostly on early structure formation, also formation of the first stars. We want to know what will happen if to the first stars if this universe really has primordial black holes. So yeah, that's the main motivation. And for the main results, we found that the standard picture of first star formation is not really changed by primordial black holes. And this may not be a really interesting result, but this is what we found. And to understand why this is the case is actually very interesting. The direct reason is that we found that these primordial black holes, they are typically far away from the star forming clouds. That's why they can hardly affect this small scale star formation process. But also on larger scales, we found that the impact of primordial black holes on early star formation history is also small. This is because there are two effects of primordial black holes, and these two effects almost cancel each other out. And this, the first effect is the enhancement of density perturbations that can accelerate structure formation. So you can imagine when we have primordial black holes at very early universe, these black holes are actually seas of structures because the black holes will pull materials onto them by their gravity. So they will actually enhance structure formation. And the second effect is heating by gas due to black hole accretion. So when gas or materials fall into a black hole, the gas will be heated up by the compression of the black hole's gravity. This will form a hot accretion disk around the black hole. And this disk will emit energetic photons that can ionize and heat the surrounding gas. So this is what we call like black hole heating or black hole feedback. So then how these two effects are relevant for the first star formation. So and then to understand this, I need to briefly explain the basic or the ABC of star formation. So to form stars, we must condense gas to very high densities to trigger nuclear reactions. And to do so, we must now be able to cool the gas efficiently. Because if we cannot cool the gas efficiently, gravity will be balanced by pressure, and then the gas cannot collapse. You cannot reach very high densities. So in the early universe, to cool the gas efficiently, we need enough coolants. And the main coolant in the early universe is hydrogen molecules. And according to complex chemistry, we know the abundance of hydrogen molecules is higher in more massive structures. So there is like a threshold mass above which we can form enough molecules to trigger star formation. This is called like the threshold mass of halos for first star formation. And now we have primordial black holes. And because these primordial black holes are seas of structures, the structure formation process is actually accelerated. So there will be more massive structures that can potentially form stars. And then from this single effect, we may conclude that, oh, with primordial black holes, we can increase star formation or enhance star formation. But don't forget, we have the second effect. So with the second effect, gas is actually heated by primordial black holes. And therefore, that threshold of mass is actually increased by primordial black holes. And then when we combine these two effects, they actually work in different directions. And in the end, the overall effect is actually small. And also, although we found that these two effects almost cancel out each other and the final impact is small, this is just for the star formation. But we also found that if we go to later stages, these primordial black holes can interact with the newly born stars. And this can have many interesting implications. But of course, this is beyond the scope of this current, this work. And in the future, we may further study that.
Your team was awarded resources from XSEED, the Extreme Science and Engineering Discovery Environment, funded by the National Science Foundation. Would you speak a little bit to the need, why you needed XSEED resources? They provide basically access to supercomputers and also to expertise to be able to make the most of them. Could you speak to why you needed this computational resource and also how it helped you overcome some of these challenges that you faced in developing these models, primordial black holes?
Yeah, maybe I start again with some general overview and then Bojan can speak to the specifics of the PBH project. In general, supercomputing resources in computational astrophysics is absolutely vital because when it comes to understanding the formation of cosmic structure, how does the universe evolve? Then there's a ruling paradigm that we have in theoretical astrophysics, and this is called ab initio simulations. Ab initio means we follow the playbook of the universe itself. We know the initial conditions because they are incredibly well known to high precision from observations of the cosmic microwave background, and then we set up the simulation boxes, and then we follow the evolution for however long we can. But the issue now is when it comes to structure formation, and this is sort of one of the really fascinating but also incredibly challenging aspects, is when it comes to structure formation, this mixes in a way, mingles together in an intricate way, the very, very large scales of the universe, millions of light years, billions of light years, with scales that are incredibly small, ultimately quantum scales. The microcosm and the macrocosm, they interact. And that means in computational terms is that any simulation that tries to model this cosmic evolution has to deal with an incredible dynamic range of scales. Scales, spatial scales, large, intermediate, small, and they crosstalk, they talk to each other one way, the other way, but also time scales. We need to evolve the universe for billions of years, but some of the processes, the atomic molecular processes that Bojan already alluded to, that drive cosmic evolution, they happen on time scales of years, even smaller time scales. And so this is an incredible demanding process to deal with this hierarchy of scales. This can only be done with supercomputing resources, because before that, we only could do simple models, analytical models, one-dimensional models, zero-dimensional models. But of course, the universe is four-dimensional and incredibly complex. This complexity absolutely needs supercomputing resources. And so, for all the time I've been at UT since 2004, really, TAC resources, TerraGrid, XSEED resources were absolutely vital to be able to push the frontier of computational astrophysics. And what Bojan now is doing with primordial black holes, this is again incredibly intricate, because primordial black holes, they are adding, and Bojan already alluded to this, they are adding even more complexity and more challenges. And Bojan, why don't you say a bit more about what you had to come up with to handle the new physics?
Yeah. For primordial black holes, so if we really want to understand their effects, we need to resolve the structures around these primordial black holes. And this is like the analogy of cloud forming. I also mentioned before that there will be structures around these primordial black holes. And to resolve these structures, we just need enough resolution elements. And that's will really increase the computational cost. So, and also in this work, we are really interested in primordial black holes around 30 solar masses, because these black holes can potentially explain the gravitational wave events we observed recently. So this means that to really resolve the structures around these stellar mass or primordial black holes, we need very high resolution. So basically, if we look into one typical halo or typical structure that can form the first stars, we need around 1 million elements to fully resolve this halo, or to fully resolve the structures around primordial black holes. And this is really why we need to use supercomputers at TAC. And also, I can give you some really detailed numbers. So now with supercomputers, with TAC, we can finish a simulation with 100 cores, CPU cores, with in just a few hours. And in this way, when you do science, really useful results, you need to do lots of tests. You need to really justify or really to improve your models. So we need to run many test simulations. And in the end, we also ran about 20 production simulations. And then we have done this, I think, in roughly a month. So this is only possible when we have supercomputers. So if we have to do this with a laptop, this will take just years. And also we may also have bottlenecks with, say, memory and other really computational problems. So supercomputers are definitely very important for this project.
Maybe Dr. Brown, I want to take advantage of this chance to ask you this about your if you wanted to speak a little bit. Now you did mention the importance of the supercomputers to this field of study, but could you speak to your own experiences as a longtime user of XSEED, how XSEED has helped support some of the work that has led up to this study and up to future studies as well, into the earliest moments, I guess, of the universe, and also explaining the mysteries that surround us here in the cosmos.
In broad terms, right, there are two big contributions from XSEED that I have benefited in my career at UT. The first, of course, is the main contribution, of course, XSEED allocates large allocations. So and for the biggest production runs, of course, this is what is really needed to do a state of the art computation. So basically, right, it's a very competitive field. There's a global competition, and having access to these resources is absolutely enabling being at the frontier of computational astrophysics. But then also, I have also benefited through support from dedicated XSEED-funded TAC personnel. So for the TAC is always at the frontier of supercomputing. And then whenever there's a new architecture, then of course there are new operations, new capabilities. And so, for example, when at some point Intel a few years ago rolled out a new chip architecture, coprocessors, and basically the idea was that how can we take maximally advantage of this. And then we identified in our simulation, right, there was a certain part of the computation, the chemistry routine, which could be ideally outsourced and put on these mic chips. And that needed some special coding and adaptation. And then I was given a dedicated help from a seed-funded TAC personnel. It comes in many, many ways. And of course, really, I have the benefit of almost now 20 years of seeing TAC grow. And of course, again, right, in the beginning, it was TerraGrid. Now it's a seed. But it's everyone who is at UT Austin, faculty members, postdocs, students, really everyone, right, we benefit from the fact that we have such a premier supercomputing center. And this is no hype. Of course, often also when I, as department chair, when I try to hire new faculty, of course, it's a very easy sell, because right, everyone knows, right, the reputation that TAC has as a premier XSEED node. So this is a major competitive advantage that we have at UT. And of course, obviously, right, supercomputing will be even more important, because now, of course, it's not only us theorists who want to simulate, of course, also the observers, the experimentalists, they need to do big data. This is just fantastic that we have this center at UT. So I'm extremely grateful throughout these decades now.
You've been listening to astrophysicist Volker Brohm and Bu-Yan Liu. Supersized Science is part of the Texas Podcast Network, the conversations changing the world, brought to you by the University of Texas at Austin. The opinions expressed in this podcast represent the views of the hosts and not of the University of Texas at Austin. For the Texas Advanced Computing Center, I'm Jorge Salazar.